Hello, this is Archbishop William Laurie of Baltimore, and you are listening to Catholic Baltimore on Q1370 WQLL. Catholic Baltimore is a weekly radio program hosted by the Archdiocese of Baltimore, airing each Sunday following the broadcast of the Radio Mass of Baltimore. We are grateful to our Catholic radio partners for sharing with us some of the contents in this program and for the opportunity to bring quality Catholic programming to the Archdiocese of Baltimore every Sunday.
This is Sean Kane, and you're listening to Catholic Baltimore. Imagine the challenge of being a Catholic physician in private practice, and one of your patients comes to you looking for help that would require you to violate your Catholic beliefs, whether an illicit medical procedure or a prescription or even a referral. Fulfilling their request would be in concert with the Hippocratic Oath, but not with the Catholic faith. So what do you do? Who do you turn to? One place is the Catholic Medical Association, and joining us today is Mario Dickerson. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Sean.
So what is the Catholic Medical Association, and how does it help physicians and support the work of Catholic physicians?
Sure. The Catholic Medical Association is a physician-led association of healthcare professionals. We've been around since 1932, and the aim since the founding has been the spiritual formation of the membership. So there's opportunities, educational opportunities, conferences, seminars to do that. But if it's not taken out, if there's not a witness element to everything that the physicians have appropriated in their lives, then it falls void. So there's a lot of witness opportunities and service opportunities for our members as well. So we do that through lobbying for healthcare policies at the federal, state, local level, radio, public service announcements as well. So, mm-hmm.
So it rather than just be a strict professional development, agency, which doctors can get anywhere, I would imagine, this clearly has a spiritual component to it that they wouldn't find elsewhere.
Absolutely. And they, from the outset, too, they've called themselves guilds when they organize, not chapters like other professional associations.
Mm. And so you mentioned 32 was the beginning of CMA. How about what's the history of the Baltimore Guild?
Right. So we have a great programs here. I was going to mention them a little bit later as well. There's
sure.
some local events going on.
So in terms of benefits to members of CMA, or can you share some of those? You mentioned kind of the spiritual component.
Sure. I'd say the biggest benefit for our members is the support of like-minded, faith-filled colleagues from around the country. The Catholic Medical Association is very much like a family. Some other benefits include our annual conference. There's the Lineker Quarterly. But I have to say that I've been inspired. People don't join the CMA for what the benefits are. Mm. They can get continuing medical education credits elsewhere and some of these other things elsewhere. They join it because they want to make a difference in healthcare policies for their patients, for the healthcare community, and for legislation to build up this culture of life and to really serve the church in its mission.
And I would imagine they gain some strength in through the kind of the fraternal sense that the guild fosters, and just knowing that there are other physicians who feel and think and obviously worship the way they do, and so that there's, I would imagine that that's a source of strength for Catholic physicians.
Absolutely. This is a grassroots organization. A lot of things happen at the guild level, and Baltimore is one of the most active guilds, so we're very proud to have their work.
As are we. So there's a great need for resources and support among people of religious faith working in the medical profession. Isn't that right?
Absolutely. One example is the outright attack on those of faith working. One example of that outright attack was in Washington State. The medical association there was proposing a resolution to pull the accreditation from Catholic hospitals and from medical schools because in their mind, some of the members there, they weren't offering the full spectrum of reproductive health, which is a code word for abortion. They weren't offering assisted suicide. So our members were very vocal in leading the defeat of that resolution. And the interesting thing, too, is this isn't just necessarily Catholic issues that are coming up. We're seeing partnerships between various faiths and different demographics as well on these issues.
So. Yeah, so I mean, at the root of that is an attempt to set religious faith aside. So it's not the Catholic faith, it's any religious beliefs that they, there's an increased secularization that you see in many industries, including the medical industry. So you mentioned this is, you know, an opportunity for the Catholic Church to partner with the Mormons, with other faith communities, because they recognize that what may be a problem for us today could be a problem for them tomorrow.
Correct, yeah.
So CMA offers speakers a platform to discuss a variety of issues that are of concern to Catholic medical professionals. Can you share some of what those issues that you've attempted to address?
Sure. There's a number of areas of concern for Catholic healthcare professionals, beginning with protecting the civil liberties of the physicians to practice medicine according to their faith. And let's face it, again, this isn't a Catholic issue. This isn't about the Catholic physician. It's about the quality of care for their patients, for your listeners. And I just want to give you one example. There's a doctor that works with children with special needs in the inner city. He views his patients and their families as requiring time and attention to really help them understand their issues and the options available to them. But unfortunately, he works in a healthcare system where they want him to spend a limited amount of time with the patients and their families so that they can see more patients during the course of the day, and presumably it's to increase their profit margin. It's not about trying necessarily to see more people in one day, you know. Mm-hmm. So there are these challenges that they're facing on a daily basis, and I could give a number of examples like that.
So there it's not necessarily that he's being asked to do something that violates church teaching, but really what he sees as what should be at the root of what he's doing, which is to provide real meaningful care to people.
Great. Yeah. Quality Catholic health care is just good health care in general.
That's right. So based on your own experience and those of others that have been related to you, what are some of the most difficult challenges that emerge for people of faith in the medical health care profession?
Again, just to reiterate, I think the biggest challenge for our doctors is conscience protection. So we're working hard to support the H.R. 940 bill, which would protect their rights. We recently drafted a document that was signed on to by 14 other leading healthcare organizations and sent to the House of Representatives. But there's another area of major concern, and it comes with the attempt to remove the physician from your healthcare. So one example of this is a PULSE document, and PULSE stands for the Physician Order of Life-Sustaining Treatment. And you could be admitted to the hospital for an irreversible illness, such as maybe you're in a diabetic coma, and someone checking you in checks off that, you know, you shouldn't receive any reversible treatments, and your healthcare, your doctor, your primary care physician wasn't involved in that conversation. So if you go on our website, there's information about that as well.
So what advice would you give any Catholic aspiring to enter the medical field today?
We need you. Would be the first thing. So continue to pursue that calling that God's given you. And you will be persecuted, I think, for your beliefs and your vision, but there's hope. And one of the sources of that, again, is through the CMA. We have over 20 student sections across the country affiliated with medical schools in addition to residency sections. We have a boot camp coming up this summer for medical students. We have about 32 medical students from across the country that we're going to help form in their faith as they go through medical school. And there's a great mentoring opportunities in the CMA for students and residents.
That's great. So you mentioned earlier, you referenced that there are a number of events that CMA hosts locally and that others nationally as well as internationally. Can you share a few of those with us?
Sure. In 2015, this year, we have a national conference coming up in Philadelphia. It's the week after the World Meeting of Families. And that's October 1st through the 3rd. And the focus of that conference is healing the wounded culture. So each of these 3 days is going to look at, you know, healing the mind, healing the body, and healing the soul. But a little closer to home for your listeners is in 2016, a month before the presidential elections, we'll be having the national conference here in D.C., and it'll be at the Omni Shurum. And the dates for that are October 13th through the 16th of 2016. And the local guild here, Dr. Borsico, has assembled a great committee to raise the expectations of the annual conference there.
So if people would like to learn more about the CMA and the Baltimore Guild, how would they do that?
Sure. The national website is www.cathmed.org, and we're on Facebook and Twitter. The Baltimore Guild has a website at bg-cma.org. And they have a number of great events coming up. There's one in particular in June that's a panel for end-of-life issues.
Excellent.
Check that out.
Mario Dickerson of the Catholic Medical Association's Baltimore Guild, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Sean.
Catholic news from the Archdiocese of Baltimore and around the world with the Catholic Review. Pope Francis's long-awaited encyclical on the environment is expected to be released June 18th. Carmelite Father Eduardo Augusto Scarell, a climate scientist who teaches at the Pontifical Catholic University of Argentina in Buenos Aires, told Catholic News Service that the Pope's goal with the encyclical is changing hearts. It will emphasize that the option for stewardship of the environment goes hand in hand with the option for the poor, he said. Climate change is among the topics expected to be addressed in the document. For full coverage, visit CatholicReview.org. A shepherd from Argentina recently traveled to Baltimore to care for one of his sheep. Bishop Luis Alberto Fernandez Alaro of the Diocese of Rafaela in Argentina visited the Archdiocese of Baltimore June 4th through the 6th to support one of his priests who is battling cancer. Father Daniel Verayud, who has been serving the Spanish-speaking community at St. Michael the Archangel in Overly and St. Joseph in Cockeysville, is hospital-bound and undergoing chemotherapy. Parishioners of St. Michael and St. Joseph have been praying for the priest, visiting him regularly and helping with everyday needs, such as providing meals and doing laundry. On June 19th at 8 p.m., St. Joseph will hold a night of praise and adoration with a musical group from El Salvador to raise funds to support Father Verayud's treatment and offer prayers for his health. For more information and to learn more about the bishop's visit, go to CatholicReview.org. Finally, don't forget that Archbishop William E. Lurie will ordain Joshua Laws, Christopher De Leon, Francis Uma, and Carlos Osorio to the priesthood June 20th during a special 10 a.m. Mass at the Cathedral of Mary Our Queen in Homeland. All are welcome. From the newsroom of the Catholic Review, this is George Matisek.
Do you want to know more about what's going on in the Catholic Church and the world than you can get from your daily newspaper or local TV? Read the only newspaper in the Archdiocese of Baltimore that covers the Catholic Church full-time, the Catholic Review. The print newspaper can be delivered to your home every other Thursday, and you can get fresh news every day online at CatholicReview.org. You can also read the inspirational Review in the Pew, ready for you every other Sunday at your local parish. Find the Catholic Review app on Apple and Android, and follow the Catholic Review on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. Wherever your faith takes you, Catholic Review Media is ready to inspire, teach, inform, and engage. Read it today, in print or online at CatholicReview.org. You are invited to the National Opening Mass of the Fortnight for Freedom, Sunday, June 21st at 10:45 a.m. at the Basilica of the Assumption in downtown Baltimore. This Mass will be celebrated by Baltimore Archbishop William Lurie and begins a 14-day period when Catholics and others can pray, reflect, and act to promote the first most cherished freedom. For more information, visit archbalt.org. May God bless you and may God bless America.
You are listening to Catholic Baltimore on Q1370 WQLL.
This is Sean Kane, and welcome back to Catholic Baltimore. 15% of elderly Americans, which includes people 65 years of age and older, live in poverty. Maryland is one of 12 states where that number is twice as high. This poverty is acutely felt in the lack of quality health care available to our older neighbors. One institution that seeks to address this need is St. Martin's Home for the Aged, operated by the Little Sisters of the Poor. And joining us today is Sister Lawrence Mary. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Sean. I'm happy to be here.
So for those of us who are unfamiliar with the Little Sisters of the Poor, could you please share with our listeners who are the Little Sisters and what is their mission?
Yes, the Little Sisters of the Poor are an international congregation of Roman Catholic women religious. We were founded in 1839 by St. Jean Jugan. And together with a diverse network of collaborators, we serve the elderly poor in over 30 countries around the world. Our mission is to offer the neediest elderly of every race and religion a home where they will be welcomed as Christ, cared for his family, and accompanied with dignity, respect, and love until God calls him to himself. That's the only apostolate of the Little Sisters.
So you mentioned Sister Jeanne Jagan. Can you tell us a little about who she was and what led her to establish the Little Sisters?
Yes, Jeanne was born in Brittany, France in 1789 at the end of the French Revolution. She grew up in great poverty. Her father, a fisherman, was lost at sea. When she was a young woman, a sailor proposed to her several times, but she finally told him that she felt God was calling her for a work that was not yet founded, a work that was not yet known. It wasn't until she was 47 years old that she knew what this work was. At that time, it was winter 1839, she discovered an elderly paralyzed woman lying out in the street where she had been abandoned when her only sister had died. Jeanne picked her up, carried her to her own home, gave her something to eat, and then she gave her own bed. And then she herself climbed up a ladder and slept on the floor in the attic. That was the very humble beginning of the Little Sisters of the Poor. Other elderly women and then men followed. Some young women came to help Jeanne, and slowly they developed into the congregation of the Little Sisters of the Poor. When Jeanne died in 1879, the congregation was already approved by the Pope and had spread to several other countries, including our own. Jeanne was canonized in 2009.
So her own poverty obviously had an impact on her decision to focus the work of the Little Sisters on the poor. What other reasons do you think the Little Sisters have chosen the elderly poor?
Well, St. John saw the great need for someone to care for the elderly who are poor, and we have always continued only this one apostolate. The need today is perhaps greater than ever. Having only one specific apostolate gives us a great unity and community and enables us to devote all our energies to the eldest of God's children, as Pope Francis has called the elderly.
So I mentioned St. Martin's home, which is a nursing home in the Catonsville area. Where else do the Little Sisters serve in the United States and elsewhere in the world?
Well, around the world, we serve in over 30 countries. We're present in France, other countries in Europe, also in the South Pacific, Asia, Africa, and South America. Here in the States, we serve in 28 homes around the country, and we also have a novitiate in Queens, New York.
When did the Little Sisters begin serving in Baltimore?
We came to Baltimore in 1869. In fact, the name of our home, St. Martin's Home, was chosen because of the great fatherly kindness that Archbishop Martin Spalding showed us at the time of the foundation. The first home was on Calvert Street, and then a permanent home was built on Valley Street, where we lived until 1969. At that time, the home was obsolete, and we moved to our current location in Catonsville. Since 1869, we have cared for over 15,000 elderly residents at St. Martin's.
So for those who are unfamiliar with St. Martin's and maybe have not visited there, could you describe what the home is like, what it does, and maybe just an average day for both the residents as well as those who care for them?
We are able to welcome the needy elderly who are still independent and able to live in small apartments, as well as residents who need the services of assisted living or skilled nursing. We have separate units, which we call cottages, for these different levels of care. We are 15 Little Sisters, and we care for 65 residents. When we finish our reconstruction, we will be able to welcome several more. A Little Sister coordinates the care in each cottage. Other Little Sisters serve in different parts of the home, such as social services, nursing management, the volunteer office, activities, etc. We are always available for the residents 24/7. We have a very strong family spirit in our home, lots of activities every day. The chapel is the center of our home. We have a chaplain, Father Stan DeBow, and we have daily mass. One Little Sister is also a member of the development team. Since our residents have limited incomes, we continue the tradition of begging, which was started by St. Jeanne Jagan. Even with that help, the help we receive from their small pensions, Social Security, and Medicaid, we need to find close to 50% of the income we need each month from friends and benefactors. We go collecting and we welcome financial donations as well as in-kind gifts.
As Catholics, we believe in the dignity of the human person from natural birth until natural death. How does the care the Little Sisters provide help those you serve maintain their dignity?
Well, first of all, we believe in the sacredness of human life and the uniqueness of each person, especially those who are the poorest and or the weakest. We strive to give care that is holistic and person-centered. We try to help each resident feel a part of our family and to remain as active and independent as possible. When a resident is actively dying, a Little Sister is with them around the clock, praying with them, making sure that they are as comfortable as possible, maybe singing a soft hymn, and if they still have family members, helping them to say farewell to their loved one. Other residents and our staff and volunteers quickly pick up this spirit, and they willingly join us in assisting the dying. It is beautiful to see how everyone in the home centers their attention and prayer upon the dying resident.
So as much as the residents benefit from your care, I suspect you and your sisters would say that you also benefit from knowing and caring for the residents. Is that right?
Yes, it is. Our mission helps contribute to the culture of life and to the valorization of the elderly by nurturing communities where each person is valued, the solidarity of the human family and the wisdom of age are celebrated, and the compassionate love of Christ is shared with all. This reflects our commitment to live what Pope Francis said recently, how I would like a church that challenges today's throwaway culture with a joyful new embrace between the young and the old. And also during this year, he remarked that the prayers of the elderly are a gift to the church and to society. Our residents are great prayers.
So speaking of your residents, I suspect that there are a few with some amazing stories and have lived amazing lives. Can you share a few of those stories?
Yes, I can share some of their stories. Time is limited, so I'll select only a few. One 92-year-old resident continues to go downtown every Thursday to volunteer at Beans and Bread, and on Friday he evangelizes at St. Patrick's on the streets in downtown Baltimore. He has been doing so for over 35 years, a real example of what our Holy Father wants us to be doing. He has always chosen to live simply because he shares just about everything he receives with those who are needier than himself. And among our three centenarians, Mary, who's 103, was a graduate of St. Agnes Hospital School of Nursing back in 1936. After being a head nurse there for many years, she was their first IV nurse who went all over the hospital starting fluids. She admits candidly that she was very good at it. Another lady who will be 102 in September is a great Ravens fan. She was honored for her 100th birthday by attending a Ravens practice and meeting her favorite players. She is often in the chapel before the sisters arrive to begin their morning prayer at 6 o'clock and stops by the chapel many times each day to whisper a little prayer.
Some amazing stories. You'd mentioned that the Little Sisters welcome donations. How can people who wish to support this amazing apostolate do that? Is there a website or a number that they should call?
Yes, our website is littlesistersofthepoorbaltimore.org. And they can donate directly online through the website. They can mail in checks to Little Sisters of the Poor at our address, 601 Maiden Choice Lane, Baltimore, Maryland, 21228. And if people think to ask their employers to match their donations, that doubles their help. When they look ahead to their estate planning or their legacy, they can always remember the poor.
Sister Lawrence Mary, thanks for being with us, and thanks for all that the Little Sisters do for the elderly poor in our area.
You're welcome, Sean. It was a great joy to be here with you this morning.
Thank you.
Are you interested in joining the Archdiocese of Baltimore and Catholic Review Media on a bus pilgrimage to the Papal Mass in Philadelphia, September 27th? Pope Francis is expected to celebrate an outdoor mass along Philadelphia's famed Benjamin Franklin Parkway. It will be a huge crowd and a great way to celebrate our faith together with hundreds of thousands of fellow Catholics, even if the Pope is just a tiny dot from your vantage point, or you can only see him on a video screen. You will want to join. what will probably be the largest gathering of Catholics in the USA this year. For more information about the September 27th pilgrimage to the Papal Mass, visit tinyurl.com/CR-Philly Bus. That's tinyurl.com/CR-Philly Bus or call 443-524-3150. 443-524-3150. See you in Philly. Life can be hard, and at times we feel overwhelmed and alone. When faced with problems, know that there is a group of Catholics who are part of the prayer ministry of the Archdiocese of Baltimore, waiting to lift you and your needs to God in prayer. This ministry is comprised of men and women, young and old, religious and lay, from every ethnic and cultural background. They pray as individuals and in groups, in homes and meeting spaces throughout Baltimore. Like you, they are people who have suffered the same hurts, fears, pains, sickness, loss, and everyday burdens. Learn more about this ministry by visiting our website at www.archbalt.org. If you are in need of prayer, send your prayer request to prayers@archbalt.org or by phone to 410-547-5517. Would you like to volunteer to be a part of the ministry? Prayer ministers are always needed. Please call or email our coordinator, who would be happy to speak with you.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of Catholic Baltimore. As we prepare for the week ahead, let us do so in prayer together as one community of faith. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Let us also ask the blessing and intercession of our Blessed Mother as we pray. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen. May God bless us and keep us always in his love.